Right, so I'd like to thank the organizers of this conference by putting it together, inviting me to speak here. It's been really fun. So I apologize for the lack of title. This is the title. No good excuse there. I'm going to go back to periodically driven systems. That has been a recurring theme in this conference. This is work that I've been doing over the last few years. It's been done with Mark, who's here, Nathaniel from Technion. Baraj, who was a student at Caltech at the time, is now moved to Maryland, and Gil from Caltech. So a question that kind of comes up in this conference and has come up often is, what kind of new possibilities do we get when we periodically drive a many-body system? And we'd like to know what type of new phases in this particular talk. We'll talk about topological phases. So we'd kind of like to extend our book of topological phases into this realm. And of course, this is very subtle. It also comes with many challenges. The first is how to even define a phase in this case, since there's no thermodynamics, there's no temperature, no ground state. We'd like some collective phenomenon, which is hopefully is going to be stable over some range of parameters. So that's kind of for sure that's going to be one requirement to call these things phases. We'd like it to be to exist or to be stable and at least over some long window of time. Okay, so that's what we would like. In this talk, I'll talk about some classes of topological phenomena that can occur in periodically driven systems, and disorder and interactions are going to play a crucial role to stabilize these phases. Okay, and I'll discuss in what way. So in a disordered system, I'll talk about a phase called the anomalous Floquet-Anderson insulator that was also discussed by Mark on Monday, and it's a relation in particular to non-adiabatic quantized pumping, I'll talk about a different type of phenomenon, which is stabilized by interactions. This is going to be a quasi-steady state, so a very long-lived a state that eventually decays, but can live for a very long time, and it carries a current, which is universal and topological. A very brief introduction to Floquet that has been introduced many times in this conference. So we have a periodically driven system. All we have is the Schrödinger equation. There's no ground state, there's no temperature that we can speak of. A very useful framework to think about these states is the Floquet framework. So we look at the evolution operator of the system over one driving period. So that's a unitary operator, and we can diagonalize it. These are the Floquet eigenstates. These are the eigenstates of this operator, and the eigenvalues are phases, which are the quasi-energies. So these eigenstates and eigenvalues encode the long-time evolution of the system, much in the same way that the energy eigenstates and the energies encode the long-time evolution of a static Hamiltonian. So we can use them much in the same way. An important difference is that these are the quasi-energies are actually phases. They're only defined mod 2 pi over t, and that's going to play an important role in what I'll present. Okay, the question is, what kind of topology can these Floquet eigenstates have, and what are their consequences? So there's been a kind of fascinating idea to take, for instance, a material, say a semiconductor, and periodically drive it and modify its bands. So now you can look at the Floquet block bands, and you can induce topology by this driving. So you can start with something which is not topological, drive it in the right way, and the Floquet eigenstates would look like the eigenstates of a topological insulator. So there's been a really pioneering work by people who are here. Takashi, in particular, proposed to take graphene and shine on it circularly polarized light, And that for the Fouquet bands, that would open a gap that would look like a gap of the Haldane model. Okay, so it would have a Chern number, it would have quantized Hall response, and there's been a whole sequence of work in that direction. For instance, showing that it actually has consequences on the transport if you start from, if you can stabilize the right state. Another proposal is to start from a Mercury telluride a quantum well in the non-topological phase, shine resonant light on it, and the Fouquet bands would look like those of the topological phase. Okay, and there's many others. So as we saw also in this conference, there's even been some experiments along these lines, showing, for instance, that a gap indeed opened in the Dirac cone of surface state of topological insulator. But what these proposals in particular have in common is that you engineer a Fouquet system that essentially mimics a Hamiltonian of some topological static system. Okay, so these are kind of Fouquet analogs of phenomena that occur even in time-independent systems. But driven systems actually open some new possibilities that have no analog in a static system. So and these would be the focus of this talk. So here I'll talk about a topological Fouquet systems that have no analog in a static system. And the reason this is possible is precisely because of the fact that the quasi-energy is a phase. Okay, so it lives on a circle, not on an infinite line. So if you think about, for instance, a 1D driven crystalline system, this would be a quasi-momentum, and this is quasi-energy. Whoops. So here the band structure lives on an infinite cylinder, whereas in a Fouquet system it lives on a torus, okay? Because both the quasi-energy and the quasi-momentum are both compact. So clearly this actually opens some new possibilities, okay, for the band structure. So let me actually elaborate a little bit more on this example. If you think about the Fouquet block band structure for 1D system, you can actually draw a weird-looking band like this. Okay, so a band dispersion doesn't have to be periodic as you sweep k from minus pi to pi. It can go back to itself modulo omega, okay, or actually modulo any integer multiple of omega. This is a perfectly legitimate band because of the fact that these two points are actually the same. Okay, so if you think about what's the consequence of this type of band, it's basically the following. So suppose you have fermions, and this band is completely filled with fermions, and you think about the average current that the system carries after one driving period. Okay, so as usual, the group velocity is just the epsilon dk. Okay, that's actually the average group velocity after one period in a Fouquet system. So you see that if you integrate the total current carried by this band, that would actually be quantized because it's just given by this winding number of the band, and that actually corresponds to a displacement of a charge of a particle over one unit cell over every period. Okay, so it's quantized pumping. This is of course not a new phenomenon. This is nothing but this so-called Tauless pump. Okay, so a charge transport is actually quantized in a band structure in 1D. Now there's a catch. Turns out that you can never have a 1D a Fouquet problem where you would get just a single band that has this winding number. Okay, so there's a fundamental reason, it's kind of easy to show, that the total winding number given by this invariant of all the bands, you sum over all the bands, that actually has to be zero. Okay, so if there's one band that has a winding number of plus one, there has to be another one with a winding number of minus one. Okay, and then you see that these two bands actually have to have some crossings somewhere in the Brillouin zone. So here there are actually two crossings, one here and another one here. Okay, and the question is what actually protects these crossings, and the answer is in the adiabatic limit, these crossings are actually almost avoided. Okay, they're generically they're actually tiny avoided crossings here, but if you drive the system slowly compared to the instantaneous gap, these avoided crossing gaps are actually exponentially small. Okay, so this is why the Tauless pump is actually adiabatic. Okay, it's only quantized in the slow driving limit where you can essentially ignore these avoided crossing gaps. Okay, so this is the famous work by Tauless, where he actually brought a simple dimerized chain model with a time-dependent on-site potential and time-dependent dimerization that gives you precisely this kind of locate band structure. Actually recently, this precise model was implemented either for fermions or bosons in cold atoms, and this phenomenon has actually been demonstrated experimentally. Okay, and this is described in these works. In 2D, it turns out that there are even more possibilities. This kind of topological configuration has been discussed in this conference by Mark and by Aditi. So I'll go briefly through it. So this would be the spectrum of a 2D system put on a strip. So K parallel to the strip is conserved, so I can draw the a band structure. I can actually have two bands. These are two bulk bands projected onto K parallel. And even though the Chern numbers of both bands can be zero, it doesn't preclude the existence of chiral edge states. You can have edge states that kind of wrap around the entire quasi-energy zone. The reason for that is that the Chern number only gives you the difference between the number of chiral edge states above and below every given band. So if that's equal, if both of them are one, the Chern number can actually be zero. So this is a new topological phenomenon, which is really unique to a periodically driven system. You can never have this in a static system. And this actually opens some new possibilities that I'd like to mention. Okay, in particular, there's a fundamental difference between chiral edge states in the driven and undriven case. So usually we're used to this unavoidable link between having chiral edge states and having some bulk bands that have Chern numbers. So if we add disorder, for instance, there's an obstruction to localization. You actually cannot localize all the states in a band that has a Chern number. Some states at some energy have to be delocalized. So if you have chiral edge states, if the system is topological, you also cannot localize all of its eigenstates. Okay, so this obstruction does not exist in this particular case. If you have a driven disordered system, all the bulk states can actually be localized, but you can still get these chiral edge states that are delocalized only along the edge. Okay, so this is one thing I'd like to discuss in a little bit more detailed, discuss how this can lead to actually non-adiabatic quantized charge pumping. So it's kind of an analog of Tauless's pump, but no requirement for an adiabatic limit here. One can write actually a very simple toy model that demonstrates this phenomenon. This is a picture describing the time-dependent Hamiltonian. Okay, so it's divided into five steps. At every step, you have a square lattice, a tie-binding model on a square lattice. At every step, you turn on a certain set of bonds, which are the thick bonds here. Okay, and you turn off all the other bonds. And you can also you fine-tune the strength of the coupling and the time such that over step number one, for instance, the particles that starts here with probability one just hops over to the neighboring site, and so forth. Okay, so you go through these steps where some sets of bonds are on and all the other ones are off, and you add a fifth step where you turn on some disorder potential and all the bonds are actually off. Okay, so what's nice about this toy model is that it's solvable by inspection pretty much. If you start from a particle somewhere in the bulk, you can follow this evolution, and you can see that what it would do is just hop to the neighboring site here, and then to the neighboring site there, and then back. Okay, so it would just do a closed loop and not move anywhere. So all the bulk states are actually localized. Then you turn on some disorder potential that would change the phase, but it actually won't change the state. Okay, so yes. These are real hoppings in this case. Right. I could add some phases that would play a kind of a similar role to this disorder potential at the end. Just they would change the phase of the state, which means the Floquet quasi energy, but not the wave function. Okay. So that's what's happening in the bulk. Sort of nothing much, but if you follow the evolution at the edge, some links are missing, and you would find that there are actually some chiral edge states that are moving along the boundary. Okay, so what you created here is precisely this kind of situation where the bulk Floquet eigenstates are actually completely localized. Okay, each one of them is localized on one site, and on the edge you have chiral edge states. And these chiral edge states, because of the fact that they're chiral, they cannot terminate. They actually span the entire quasi-energy zone. This looks like it's very fine-tuned, but because of the fact that the bulk states are localized, it would actually be stable. Even if you deviate away from this fine-tuned point, the localization length would grow, but it would still remain finite over a finite range of parameters. Okay, and this is actually related to quantized pumping in the following way. So let's take this kind of system we call the AFAI. So it's the anomalous Floquet-Anderson insulator, lack of a better name. Okay, this is a system on a cylinder. All the bulk states are localized, and there are chiral edge states running along the two boundaries. And suppose that we manage to initialize this system in the following state. Basically, all the shaded region here is completely filled with fermions. So basically, all the states in this region have an occupation number of 1, and all the blank region is empty. Okay, so this is some initial state that we can initialize. It doesn't have to be a Floquet eigenstate, as we try to draw here. The boundary of the filled region doesn't have to be anything in particular. It doesn't have to be precise. The only important thing is that sort of close to the boundary, or a few localization lengths from the boundary, all the states are filled, and close to the other boundary, all the states are empty. Okay, and it doesn't matter exactly how you transition between these two regions. And now you just look at the current that flows through a cross-section of the system, a average over time. Okay, so you average that over some time. And what you'll find is that this current is actually, if you average over time, over a long enough time, this current actually converges to exactly 1 particle per period. Okay, so this current would be quantized. You can understand the reason why that would be quantized, because there's a chiral edge state at the boundary, which is kind of completely filled. So that's exactly like the chiral band that I drew before for a 1D system. But here, because of the fact that it's basically like a quasi 1D system, which has 1 chiral band moving clockwise and one chiral band moving counterclockwise. But unlike in the 1D example, these two counterpropagating bands are actually spatially separated, so they cannot backscatter into each other. So if I fill only one of them, I'll get a quantized current moving clockwise. And a particle is moving, cannot backscatter to the other edge. Okay, so it's like a Taylor's pump, but it doesn't actually rely on the adiabatic limit. You could do it even fast, and it would remain quantized. The reason you need to time average is because of the fact that you haven't started from a Floquet eigenstate. Okay, this front here, the boundary of the filled region, would move around a little bit. It cannot go very far because it's in a completely localized region. But that would cause, if you just average over 1 period, that would cause a little deviation from the quantized value. Okay, but yeah. No, right. So the bulk has no Chern number, but it's still topological. Okay, the fact that these chiral edge states exist is still because of the bulk. It's just that this topological property you could not capture by the Chern number of the bulk states. Okay. Yes.
So I understand. If you map out actually where this current is coming from, is it coming from the edge state, or is it coming from?
Yeah. So that's an excellent question. Okay. So at first we were a little bit surprised by the answer. The answer is that the current itself is not carried at the edge. It's actually carried at this boundary. Okay, and the reason for that is the following. The edge itself is completely filled. Okay, so if you have a region where in a tight binding model where you just put one particle in every site, the current is going to be 0. Okay, so you can say there is a current because there is an edge state, but the current actually doesn't flow where the edge state is. It flows here. It flows at the boundary, okay, at the region of order a localization length from the boundary. That's related to the quantized magnetization that Mark talked about on Monday. Okay, the bulk has a magnetization of 1. So there's a magnetization current which kind of cancels the current from the edge state here, but then is unbalanced here. Okay, other questions? Right. Right. Yeah. So there are several differences. So first of all, if you have a quantum Hall state with disorder, there would always be some delocalized states in the bulk. Okay. So you can't actually localize all the states in a Landau level, for instance. Okay. So you can localize sort of almost all of them, but there will be one energy where there are delocalized states. Right, the localization length has to diverge somewhere. It's like a transition. Yeah, right. So if you try to do this in just an ordinary quantum Hall state, there would be delocalized states at some energy in the bulk. Now I just started by filling everything on 1/2. So in particular, I fill these delocalized states partially. So this front would actually not stay there; it would start propagating. Okay. Now there's an interesting connection that. That Mark discussed, and let me mention it briefly. So in a quantum Hall state, what's quantized is the derivative of the magnetization with respect to the chemical potential. That's actually related to the NdB, to the Hall connectivity. Here, it turns out that it's the magnetization itself which is actually quantized. Okay, so it's not the response of the magnetization to chemical potential, it's the magnetization which is quantized. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. Sorry. Can you? Yes. It does a little bit. Okay. So this edge would breathe a little bit because the initial state is not a Flocke-Agin state. Okay. But it can't go very far. So because all these states are localized at the boundary. Okay. The current also, you would say, would fluctuate a little bit from one period to the next, but if you average, it kind of has to average to one. Okay, so it's a topological Floquet phenomena, which is here, owes its existence to the fact that the system is disordered. We believe that this would also be stable to interactions, but that's something that one would need to check. I'd like to talk a little bit more about interactions, not in this system, but back in 1D. I guess I still have 10 minutes. Total. Right. Okay, great. I'll talk a little bit about interactions in Floquet systems, many Floquet systems that also have been some recurring topic in this conference. Okay, it's kind of a nice game to engineer all of these Floquet band structures, but the question is, do they have any consequence in an interacting system? Okay, are these Floquet bands real, or are they just an artifact of non-interacting systems? In particular, think of the following situation. So we have a periodically driven many-body system with some a single particle a Floquet dispersion, okay, which are these two bands, and we want to initialize the system in some state. Okay, so we fill, say, part of this band, and now we let the system evolve in time. Okay, so usually we would say the system would thermalize. Okay, so it would basically explore the entire energy shell or all the available Hilbert space with a given energy, and this band is at higher energy, so this band would have a smaller population relative to that band. Okay, but Floquet systems are different because basically only quasi-energy is conserved, not the total energy. For instance, we can have collisions between particles. These particles are interacting. We can have this pair that would collide. This particle would scatter here. The other particle would recoil, but it can actually scatter over here. Okay, so this process basically absorbed a photon of energy omega from the driving field. Quasi-energy is perfectly conserved in this process, but you see that you essentially excited a one particle to the other band. This quote higher band, there's no real sense in which this band is higher in energy, okay, because the quasi-energy is on a circle. So this means that a kind of quasi-energy conservation is a very weak constraint on the available Hilbert space. And generically, what you expect is that if you have a closed many-body driven system, you wait long enough, the system will just absorb more and more energy from the driving field. And the only stable steady state of the system would be the so-called infinite temperature state, where all the states are equally probable. Okay, so the system would basically equilibrate to this type of state. Now, this state, of course, is kind of boring. In particular, it means that all the possible topology that was there in the single particle band structure is completely lost after you wait for long enough. Okay, so if this is the general expectation, and there are some ways to avoid this kind of long time fate of a periodically driven system. For instance, if you have enough disorder, the system can be many body localized. If you couple the system to a bath, the bath would suck out energy at a certain rate, and you'll get to some steady state, which is non-trivial and can have interesting properties. But in this part of the talk, I'll actually not allow for any of these, so I'm considering a closed and clean translational invariant system. So this is kind of the generic long-time evolution that we expect. Okay, so maybe there are people are thinking about some interesting examples where this might be avoided, but this is supposed to be the at least the generic situation. Let me also mention that if the driving frequency is very high, okay, if the driving frequency is much, much higher than the bandwidth, the interaction strength, any microscopic scale, then there are some interesting works that by Dima in particular that show that the absorption rate of energy in that case would be very, very slow. It would actually be exponentially slow in the driving frequency. Okay, so that's like expanding this Floquet zone to be very big relative to the bandwidth. Okay, and then you sort of expect that the system would evolve according to the average Hamiltonian. It sort of doesn't feel the very rapid oscillations. This is actually not what we want, because the unique topological Floquet band structure that I've described cannot exist in that limit. Okay, so if the frequency is very, very high compared to the bandwidth, basically we're back to an effective static Hamiltonian. And we can never get any of these unique topological phenomena to Floquet states. They intrinsically rely on the frequency being of order of the bandwidth or less. Okay, so what can happen in this limit? To be concrete, we've studied the following system. So back to 1D. This is a Floquet band structure of a tauless pump. Okay, so suppose we have two bands, and this is the Floquet band structure. There's one band that winds around the quasi-energy zone with a winding number plus one, and another one with the winding number minus one. And we initialize the system with a partial filling only of the green band, of the right moving band, okay, with particles. These particles can either be fermions or bosons, it doesn't really matter for this purpose. And we add some interactions and let the system evolve as a function of time. Okay, and the question is, what's the dynamics of the system? Okay, so at the very long time limit, what we expect is the system to thermalize, to just absorb energy, and both of these bands would be equally occupied. In particular, that means that the current carried by the state would actually relax to zero. Okay, but how does this process actually occur? Okay, and let me mention that this is a gapless system because there's a partial filling, or these particles are bosons. Okay, there's no gap relative to the many-body spectrum that we started from. So the adiabatic theorem actually doesn't apply here. Okay, so the situation that we're interested in particular is the following. So particles would definitely start scattering very rapidly in this system because there are many available states to scatter to. And the scattering has to conserve quasi-momentum and quasi-energy, but nothing else. Okay, so all sorts of scattering processes are possible, but we can divide them into two classes. We can have intra-band scattering, say these two particles scattering to here and to there, within the green band, within the same band, or we can have inter-band scattering processes. Okay, so these two particles will scatter, one remains in the same band, but the other one gets scattered to the counterpropagating band. Okay, and if somehow we can suppress the inter-band scattering processes parametrically, what we can get is an interesting situation. Okay, so what can happen is that there's an intermediate time window where particles actually equilibrate, but only within the green band, and they don't actually populate the yellow band at all. Okay, and if that happens, we can get a quasi-steady state that would have an interesting property. Okay, the current in the state would actually be universal. It would be completely independent of the details, like the band structure, interaction strength, and so forth. It would depend only on the density of particles in the green band times 1 over t, the driving period. Okay, so this would mean that the system has thermalized, but only within a single Floquet band, okay, and not thermalized globally. We don't expect this to last forever. Eventually, the system would thermalize completely to infinite temperature, but first we might get this kind of infinite temperature constrained state. Okay, it's infinite temperature, but constrained within a single Floquet band. Okay, so this means that even with interactions in this situation, the Floquet bands still have some significance. Okay, so does this actually happen? Okay, do we get this kind of current-carrying quasi-steady state? So let me show you a simulation. Okay, so this is a microscopic model. It's just Taulis's polyacetylene model with a tight binding chain with two sites per unit cell, with a modulated on-site potential and a modulated dimerized hopping, which are modulated in a way to get a non-zero winding number for the Floquet bands. Okay, we've chosen some specific parameters. This is the actual Floquet band structure that we get, okay, with the two bands. They look kind of complicated, but the important thing is that if you track them, the black one actually has a net winding number of plus one. Okay, it winds around several times and then unwinds. But the net result is that it winds around the quasi-energy zone once, and the red band as it has a winding number of minus one. Okay, so this is our band structure. Now what we're going to do is initialize the system such that the black band is half filled and the red band is empty with some states, some k states, it doesn't really matter which. Okay, and just let the system evolve in time with some interaction. Okay, the interaction we chose here, these are fermions. There's an intra-unit cell nearest neighbor interaction. Okay, and we measure the current over some bond, sort of as a function of time, and this is what it looks like. So the current at time zero is some value, which is given by the initial state. There's a very fast relaxation process that occurs. This is time in units of the driving period. Okay, and then you see that the current sort of saturates into a value which is actually half in these units. Okay, it's half because the density of particles is actually half per unit cell. Okay, so half times 1 over t. And then it's kind of sticks there for a while, and this is the same simulation but with a very, very, with a much larger time scale. Eventually, this current actually decays to zero. So it does look like there's a sort of a two-step equilibration process. At short times, we equilibrate to what looks to be the infinite temperature state within one Floquet band, and only over much longer times we actually decay to the real infinite temperature state that has zero current. Okay, and by going to different parameters, this is with a certain driving frequency. At the lower driving frequency, I'll show that you can actually make this second time to be much, much longer than this. Yes?
When you approximate this two infinite temperature states, we slowly
Yes.
So I can just approximate it.
Yeah, right. So it's like right. So it's basically as if the particle number at every band is almost conserved.
Yes.
So that's right. So this is exactly how we think about these things. Yes. Right, so I haven't said, okay, so here we just put some microscopic interaction, they're there, so definitely there. My goal here is to explain why they're suppressed. Okay, so, we studied actually the slow rate, the interband scattering rate, as a function of parameters of the problem. Okay, so U is the interaction strength. Delta is the minimum gap between the instantaneous bands, which is changing as a function of time and k, but this is the minimum over all k's and all times. Okay, and omega is the driving frequency. Delta m is some parameter of order one that I'll explain. Okay, so and what we found is that the rate is actually very well described by this simple expression. Okay, these are numerical simulations with different parameters, and it seems like if you fix u and delta, and you just vary omega, the rate is actually exponentially small. Okay, so it's this parameter is always smaller than one for us. So the rate is going to be exponentially small in delta over omega. While if you fix delta and omega and change u, it's a power law dependence on u. Okay, and this power is given by delta over omega. This is basically what these different curves are showing. Okay, so this is log of the interband rate. It's basically this rate, okay, this time scale, this is nearly exponential. On a log plot is a function of log u over delta, and these straight lines mean that it's a power law dependence with a omega dependent slope, okay, or power. And this is with fixed u as a function of delta over omega. On a semi-log plot, and these straight lines means it's an exponential dependence. Okay, so this simple formula seems to describe the interband rate pretty well. Okay, so why is the interband rate suppressed? Why does it follow this form? Okay, so it has to do with the structure of the single particle Fouquet wave functions and how that affects their scattering rates. So the way we found to understand that is to actually think about the Fourier components of the single particle Fouquet wave functions. Okay, so according to Fouquet theorem, you can write every Fouquet eigenstate in this form. It has the quasi-energy factor, and it's times a periodic function, as a function of t. Okay, and you can plot the wave function of the Fouquet eigenstate as a function of the harmonic number, basically the Fourier transform of the periodic part. Okay, and every Fouquet single particle eigenstate would be localized in energy space, basically around the value given just by the average energy of that state. Okay, if you look at the instantaneous bands, they vary periodically as a function of time. So the peak would be at the average energy, and the spread would be given by the spread of the instantaneous energy as a function of time. So now you see that if the two bands are actually separated in energy by some amount given by the gap, the Fouquet eigenstates as a function of a Fourier harmonic would also be separated in energy space. Okay, and this is what would give you actually a suppression by itself of the interband scattering. So if you have two particles that scatter within the same band, the overlap of their single particle Fouquet wave functions could be large, whereas if you have interband scattering, these would be now two particle Fouquet eigenstates. If you scatter one of them to the other band, its a wave function has to shift as a function of Fourier harmonic, and that means that the overlap between final and initial states might be suppressed. Okay, so this is an actual example with a band structure. We just take the non-interacting two-particle Fouquet eigenstates as a function of harmonic. Okay, so we have two states, K1, K2, that scatter into K1 prime and K2 prime. Okay, so these states all within the same band, and these are the two-particle Fouquet eigenstates, and they have a large overlap. Whereas if we consider the interband scattering of K1, K2, same K1, K2, but the final states are have one particle in the other band, these are what the two particle wave functions actually look like. Okay, so they have a very, very small overlap. There is some overlap, okay, you can't see it here, but these wave functions actually decay. It's faster than exponential, turns out. Okay, but there is a small overlap. You can sort of, within the Born approximation, you can map out the Floquet, Born-Floquet scattering, two particle scattering rate. Okay, so you start from from any two states, K1 and K2, these are the axes here, and you calculate the total scattering probability into all the possible states, either within the same band or at different bands. Okay, so this is log of the scattering, of the total scattering probability, and this is intra-band scattering, and this is inter-band. This is actually scattering one particle to the other band, and you see that the scale here is very different. Okay, this is log scale. So interband scattering is actually very, very suppressed. Okay, now this explains the trend. This explains why interband scattering is suppressed relative to intraband by many orders of magnitude, just because of the matrix element. But it doesn't actually explain the trend we saw in the simulation. Okay, this would give you in particular that the scattering rate goes like U squared because it's Born approximation, and what we saw that it actually goes like U to some high power. Okay, that depends on delta over driving frequency. Okay, so it turns out that the dominant scattering process is not this. Okay, it's a more complex process, and I'll just describe it in 2 minutes, and I'll finish. If you think about the T matrix, actually of two particles, or it can even be a many-body process of many particles. Okay, so these would be the initial Floquet wave functions, say of two particles. Okay, it would be two particles in the right moving band, and then that's the initial state, and then the final state would be one in the right and one in the left. Okay, so we saw that these wave functions have some spread in harmonic space, and if that spread is much smaller than the gap, then this matrix element is going to be very small. So the Born approximation amplitude is going to be very small. Okay, but if you consider a high order process where you virtually absorb many, many photons, okay, so you can actually avoid paying this very small matrix element by virtually scattering only to nearby states, but then you'll have to go to very high order in the interaction. Okay, so there's an energy denominator that would grow linearly as a function of the order that you go to, and if you multiply through all these energy denominators, so that means that there's some optimal order in the interaction to perform this interband scattering, and the order in the interaction would actually go like delta over omega. Delta m here is just the spread of the single particle Floquet wave functions, okay, which is of order of the bandwidth. So this actually gives you the right parametric dependence. Okay, so we believe it's actually this type of process that's dominant for the interband scattering. Okay, so with that, I'll just summarize. Okay, so there are new topological phenomena that are there in Floquet systems that have no analog in static systems. Okay, and disorder in interactions can lead to new things. Okay, thank you.
And for maybe 2 questions.
So I have maybe a stupid question. So I mean, when this thing heat up, can it also emit photons? Like if you allow for dynamics of
right. So it does also emit. So it definitely does. If you start from an equilibrium state relative to some Hamiltonian, it would absorb more than it would emit. But if you start from some non-equilibrium situation, like a population inversion, it would actually emit more than it would absorb. Okay, but it would always converge towards kind of the infinite temperature state.
So if I consider the non-interacting case, yes. Is there a simple formula for topological environment that determines the number of chiral edge states? And
yeah.
Is there a generalization, like a periodic table?
Yes. Right. There is. Right. So the formula that determines the number of chiral edge states of the given quasi energy depends on the full time evolution. It's not just a property of U of capital T of the Floquet operator. It's actually a property of U of little t. Okay. kind of, it knows about the evolution within the period. But yes, there is a formula. No, it's a Z. It's kind of you can have any number of chiral edge states at any given quasi energy within any gap.
All right, let's stop here and thanks, Aris again.